This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. But I am from New Jersey, the most densely populated and most paved state in the nation, where the revolution neither began nor ended, but which saw much of the fighting and two cruel winters for George Washington's army. Paterson, New Jersey, lays claim as the origin of America's Industrial Revolution. Menlo Park is the home of Thomas Edison's invention factory, and it's the place Bruce Springsteen was born to run from. Its industrial wastelands, the Pine Barrens, and the backside view of the Statue of Liberty cannot be found anywhere else, USA. And every one of the other 49 states can boast its own unique scenery and warts, which is the idea behind a new book that assigned portraits of each of the 50 states to 50 different writers. So today, if you're back in your home state for a visit, call and let us know about the one thing that makes you glad you're back, or glad you left. 800-989-8255 is the phone number. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our website. Go to npr.org and click on Talk of the Nation. Later in the program, we want to hear your stories about who is not at the table this year for whatever reason. You can send us an email about that now, talk@npr.org. And, of course, we'll also keep an eye on the situation in Mumbai. But first, Matt Weiland joins us on the phone from his home in New York City. He's one of the editors of the book, State by State, A Panoramic Portrait of America. Happy Thanksgiving, Matt, and thanks for taking some time out for the celebration.
Hey, thanks a lot. I'm really pleased to be there with you.
And you wrote in your introduction that you actually had three writers who vied for the honor of writing about New Jersey.
We sure did. New Jersey pride reared its wonderful head. We ended up giving it to the food writer Anthony Bourdain, who I think wrote a magnificent piece. But we were sorry to miss out on some of the other writers who were so keen to write about New Jersey.
And I read Anthony Bourdain's piece. He in fact grew up in the town next to the town that I grew up in, and he had this wonderful, well, among the many wonderful lines: "As far as I was aware, no one in our world had a tennis court, much less a pool, had affairs with one another, or committed suicide. That kind of ennui was beyond our means."
Capturing the truth of New Jersey. He also writes wonderfully about the childhood escapade of chasing the truck that sprayed for mosquitoes.
Yes, down on the shore. All of these wonderful stories, as you describe it, not just the great places, the river gorges of Colorado, the great falls in New York State, but as you describe it, the half-dead towns too alive to be ghosts, the rusting historical markers buried in the weeds, the anonymous bits of land with their own hidden histories and surprising beauties and grace. Those were the stories you were looking for?
That's exactly right. I mean, it's a book, of course, that has some of the writers visiting very famous places in America, the Alamo or Mount Rushmore. But I think some of the pieces that move me most are the pieces about undistinguished places or places that aren't celebrated so often. I think of the young novelist Josh Ferris, who wrote about his youth in Key West and working in a kind of scummy diner there, and all the things he learned from the waitresses and the guys washing the dishes, and how that place made him and informed his view of the world. And I think that's true for all of us.
There's a banner across the iconic picture or emblem on your the front page of your book, on the cover of your book: "Take pride in your country." Well, you're making a point that if we want to take pride in our country, we have to remember the mosquito spraying trucks and the swamps as well as the Empire State Building.
That's absolutely true. I mean, I think patriotism is one of those words that somehow people feel uncomfortable to use sometimes, and we wanted to reclaim it a bit, to be proud of all the little things that go into making us the and the places that we come to know as in our youth and beyond, that even things that we don't love at the time, I think, come to we identify with and become part of us, and we wanted to rescue that, also to defend a little bit the country from the just overweening forces of homogenization. Mm-hmm. Anyone who takes a drive on the interstate or flips around commercial radio or goes to a big box superstore can come to feel like the whole country is the same wherever you go. But I think we all know that that's not true. That the country remains surprisingly varied in accent, in temperament, in sense of humor, in all sorts of things. And we wanted to remind ourselves to take pride in all of that.
Well, you also had a great opportunity. This is an idea based upon an old Works Progress Administration project back in the 1930s, which did a lot of things, but including state guides. And you had the same opportunities those editors had of, assigning commissioning pieces from well-known or struggling authors.
Yeah, that's right. Of course, the original Federal Writers Project employed more than 6,000 American writers at the heart of the Depression in the mid-30s. Writers like Saul Bellow and Ralph Ellison, Studs Terkel, Richard Wright, on and on, wrote for the American Guide series. And they took as their mantra this wonderful phrase I've always loved, to describe America to Americans. A very, very simple, but I think a noble ideal. And so Sean Wilsey and I took that as our own. And we assigned some of the pieces to writers that I think everyone knows, or many will and love, writers like Jonathan Franzen and Jhumpa Lahiri, and Barry Hanna, Essie Hinton, the great author of The Outsiders. But we wanted to go beyond that, too, and that's why we assigned some of the pieces to Anthony Bourdain, a food writer, or Alexander Payne, the great filmmaker, writing about Nebraska, and even some writers that maybe, whose names aren't as familiar to readers yet, but who will be in time.
Well, we've asked some of our listeners over the past week to send us some essays about their states, where they live. And we have Ellen on the line from Tallahassee, Florida, who wrote this about the Sunshine State. My state is Florida, North Florida, not the white sand and Disney Florida people usually imagine. When I am kayaking down a quiet, lazy river watching herons, turtles, hawks, mullet, manatees, and beavers following my path under a canopy of live oaks and cypress trees dripping with Spanish moss that shades the clear spring water, I remember the giant python that exploded after eating a 6-foot alligator, and I think this is Florida. Ellen joins us now on the phone. Ellen, that's wonderful stuff. The python exploded?
Yes. Didn't you remember that story? It's from just a couple of years ago, but it was a photo that circulated on the internet because it was so striking, the exploded snake with the, you could still see the alligator's body in there.
This is something that's going to appeal to a lot of people on Thanksgiving Day.
Right.
As they're sitting down to dinner. And Ellen, this other scene that you write, though, that's beautiful stuff.
Right, exactly. North Florida is beautiful, and some people don't imagine how natural it is. They think of the sort of glamour and ritziness of South Florida with Miami Beach and everything. But North Florida is definitely the deep south, and it's quiet and beautiful in its nature.
There are parts of North Florida referred to, as I understand it by some of the natives, as Baja Alabama.
Right, exactly. We're the Southern Alabama.
And this is, you grew up there? Do you still live there?
I didn't grow up there, actually. I'm from Massachusetts originally, but I've been here for several years.
And do you intend to stay?
Yeah, I love Florida. I don't know, actually. You never know, but I do love Florida, and I'm having a really good time here. Been here for several years, and you can't beat the weather. We have all the doors and windows open today. It's quite different from my family, who's celebrating Thanksgiving in Massachusetts. So,
Ellen, have a happy Thanksgiving dinner.
Thank you for having me on. I love your show.
Thanks very much. Appreciate that.
What an excellent piece of writing that was.
Really nice piece of writing, and you sort of envy her both the experience of the kayak trip and the picture of the exploded python.
That's right. That speaks to something that ran throughout the book, that is, early on we felt as though, a place like California might need two different essays because Northern and Southern California are so different.
Hey, North and South Jersey, too.
Well, exactly, and we felt the more we worked on it, we realized every state contains multitudes, and that's why we asked each writer to just, to not try to be comprehensive, but to tell us one good story, particularly one that captures something about a state that we may not already have known. And as Ellen, as the caller said, that is what she described is so Florida, even if it's different from every other story you could hear about the state.
Let's see if we get a caller on the line. If you're back home visiting your state, tell us one thing you miss about it, or are glad you're missing about it when you live elsewhere the rest of the year round. Lee is on the line. Lee calling us from Silver Springs in Nevada.
Yes, the northern part of the state. And on the rim of the Great Basin High Desert.
And are you back there visiting, or is this where you live?
This is where I live.
And what do you love about that part of the state?
Aside from the abounding beauty of the desert and our gorgeous skies, Nevada is the only state that I know of that actually celebrates its statehood with a paid holiday and a big parade in our capital of Carson City that features, well, I'll get a little alliterative here, big gambling, brothels, Burning Man, and Bornigans all marching down the road together.
Under the Battleborn flag.
Under the Battleborn flag of a newly blue state.
Of the newly blue state. We do have to say that, of course, I believe the state of Massachusetts does celebrate its own Independence Day.
Oh, okay. Well, and deservedly so.
And deservedly so, too. They wear pilgrim hats and run a fairly well-known marathon race, and I believe the local baseball team plays an early day game that day.
Well, given that we have Burning Man and brothels, we're more scantily clad often.
I believe they may have both those things in Massachusetts, but not in public.
Well, thanks. I love the show.
Lee, thanks.
Thanksgiving all.
Thanks very much for the phone call.
Sure.
And Matt Weiland, you must be hearing 1,000 stories you wish you could have gotten in.
I'll say. Though that was one of our hopes with the book. You know, we wanted to elicit these sorts of reactions. I think people take much more pride in their own state than we usually realize. You know, it's the way we come to define ourselves most often, especially when we're traveling abroad. You say where you're from. First and foremost.
Well, Matt Weiland, thanks very much. We're going to let you get back to your celebration and to your family.
Well, thanks very much. Happy Thanksgiving.
And happy Thanksgiving to you. Matt Weiland, co-editor of State by State, A Panoramic Portrait of America, with us today by phone from his home in New York City. We're going to continue taking your calls. If you're back home visiting, what was the one thing you really missed or the one thing you're glad you got away from? 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. And we're also going to talk with a couple of Matt Weiland's contributors about the states they wrote about, Ohio and North Carolina. As it happens, who could figure this? The states where our two producers today happen to hail from. And, well, I guess we talked a lot about New Jersey. I can't whine too much. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Later in the program, we're going to talk about those who are not at the table for Thanksgiving this year, for whatever reason. You can send us an email now and tell us your story, talk@npr.org. We'll take some phone calls later, of course. But right now, we're talking about a new book, State by State, A Panoramic Portrait of America, and asking you to tell us what makes your home state special, or not so special if you're back visiting. What are you glad you saw that you normally miss? What are you glad you miss anymore? 800-989-8255. Email talk@npr.org. We have two emails about the state of California. This one from Elizabeth. Hi, I just wanted to share my own personal portrait of California. I work on a huge ranch, and it's amazing to be completely alone, except for the grasses and oaks that I study, plus the occasional deer, rattlesnake, coyote, or bobcat. The beauty changes with the time of day. Soft, warm colors in the morning, brilliant blue skies and hot sun midday, and purples, blues, and blacks in the evenings. Thanks, Liz Goble. And this from Amanda. I moved to Northern California 14 years ago, and every cliche I'd ever heard proved true. Within weeks, my hairstylist disclosed that most civil servants are actually aliens. A mother in my playgroup shared about her out-of-body experience, and everybody talked about their spiritual journey. Ludicrous, perhaps, but 14 years later, I still prefer to have conversations about the way stations on my own spiritual journey rather than one, what university I went to, or two, how much money I make. Well, joining us now is Susan Orlean, a staff writer at The New Yorker magazine, who contributed an essay on Ohio, her home state, to the book. She's with us from her current home in Columbia County in New York. Susan Orlean, nice to have you on the program today. Happy Thanksgiving.
You too, and I'm happy to be here.
And you wrote about a state which you say does not live up to many of the myths that we hold about it.
Well, I think a part of the challenge of writing about a place is seeing through the received wisdom about that place. And when I started working on the piece, I thought, well, the thing about Ohio is it's nothing like what you're told it's like. And when I first left Ohio and was in college, and later when I say to people that I was from Ohio, and occasionally somebody would say, oh, do you live on a farm? And I would think, a farm? I live in Cleveland. It's one of the most industrialized places on the planet. Realizing that this notion that Ohio was a flat cornfield, endless flat cornfield. So I had fun with the piece thinking, let me think of all the things that you assume about Ohio and methodically dismantle them.
Including my favorite, that the Cuyahoga River burns regularly.
Right. Well, this is, of course, one of the things that it was a double-edged sword. Some of the things about Ohio that made it distinctive were not very appealing, like the fact that it had such bad pollution that the Cuyahoga River was set on fire, and it was set on fire, most famously by one of the mayors of Cleveland. And, of course, for good reason, and knock on wood, that happens not to be true anymore.
And
Lake Erie's been cleaned up. Cuyahoga River, you still wouldn't want to go swimming in it, but it's a lot cleaner than it was when I was growing up.
Well, you should be glad Randy Newman saw the fire. He wrote a great song.
Oh, I think this whole piece was basically a rebuttal to Randy Newman. I think that is what my impulse was, to both say a lot of what you say about Ohio is simply not true, but secondly, grappling with the slight inferiority complex someone from Ohio has.
So inferior that you used to tell people that your mother dated Sam Shepard, the famous killer who was the inspiration for the Fugitive.
Yes. Well, let me explain before it makes me sound like a complete psycho. But yes, I did claim this. And the reason I wrote about it in the piece was being from Ohio always made me feel, when I was around kids from New York and California and other states, it made me feel like I was so generic. There was nothing about Ohio that seemed exceptional. Everything, excuse me, I have a little laryngitis here, but everything about Ohio seemed so normal and so regular. So I would seize on anything that seemed extreme. Now, Sam Shepard, the famous murderer, did grow up and live in Cleveland and had his practice in Cleveland. And my mother knew someone who knew someone who knew him. Somehow I conflated this to a statement that my mother had dated Sam Shepard.
And clearly just barely escaped with her life.
Absolutely. And that this, by definition, made me a quite exceptional person rather than just another nice girl from a nice state.
Let's get someone else from a nice girl from a nice state on the line. This is Pam. Pam with us from Arcanum in Ohio.
Hi.
Hi, Pam.
Hi. One of the things I'm lucky because I live in Dart County, and that's the land of Annie Oakley and Old Thomas. But the one of the things that I, when I was in seminary and living in Boston, that I missed was the smell that rain was coming on or snow was coming on, because you don't get that on the coast.
Uh-huh. My producer grew up in Akron and says she missed the smell of rubber. So,
I'm not sure
you get that in Boston either.
Right. And in Cleveland, I can't say that we had distinct smells of steel mills, but we certainly didn't have the smell of salt in the air as you do get it in Boston.
No, that's true. That's true. And I took that for granted when I left to go to seminary there, and when I came home after I was finished, I was like, I am never leaving the Midwest again.
You know what? The Midwest is unfairly overlooked, and it was a great place to grow up. And actually, my piece about Ohio is meant to be desperately affectionate. It was a wonderful place to grow up, and in a way, a wonderful place to discover in retrospect what it gave to me in terms of character, a sense of not being defined by some strong character trait, but rather that I kind of was a person with my own character place that I felt strongly about. And I think it makes you very open and very enthusiastic about wonderful experiences. If you're from a place, it just gives you a nice, solid background.
Oh, absolutely. It's just like, Dirk County is very rural. It's the farming, God-fearing, corn-fed folks. And it's just, we still have the county fair that lasts for 10 days. And
yeah.
Yeah. We'll all go there for the butter cow, Pam. Thanks very much for the call. Have a happy Thanksgiving to you.
You guys do the same. Have a blessed day.
Bye-bye. And Susan Orlean, thank you for your time today. Happy Thanksgiving to you.
And to you, too.
Susan Orlean, a staff writer for The New Yorker, joined us today from her home in Columbia County, New York. Her essay about Ohio appears in State by State, a panoramic portrait of America. This email from Mandy Schilling in Wichita, Kansas. The part of Texas I am from is really flat, which I never liked growing up. Then, after living in the mountains of New Mexico, it seemed even flatter. However, because you can see forever there, the sunsets are spectacular. Another listener, Ryan from Anchorage, Alaska, sent us his essay about the land of the midnight sun, and Ryan joins us now by phone from Anchorage in Alaska. Ryan, nice to have you with us today.
Hey, how's it going, Neil?
And could you read the essay you sent us?
Can I read it to you?
Yeah, go ahead, please.
Sure. I wrote, Alaska, home of the world's largest oil pipeline, most corrupt political figures, and coldest winters. If you are just visiting, there are plenty of opportunities to be mauled by bears, to watch the northern lights, and to see the ice sculptures. Alaska is special because of its vastness. Alaska has mountains, glaciers, and wildlife that the lower 48 hasn't seen for thousands of years. Alaskans can scale up mountains on snow machines and descend just as quickly on skis or snowboards. But what I think makes Alaska truly something else is its women. Alaskan girls will out-hunt, out-fish, and out-camp anyone. Yes, Alaskan girls are what make Alaska truly special because they know how to take care of themselves. Nowhere else will you find girls that can ride ATVs, play hockey, or look as good in down jackets as Alaskan girls.
And you're going to find that's going to generate a lot of controversy, but hey, I'm from New Jersey, most corrupt state in the Union?
Yeah.
Just recently. This is a new thing for Alaska.
Yeah.
We go back deep, and we're going to get calls from New Orleans and Louisiana suggesting that, I don't know from nothing about corruption.
Mm.
Well, this is a great essay. How long have you been in Alaska?
Oh, I've lived here my whole life.
Really? That's unusual. Most people come to Alaska.
What was that?
Most people come to Alaska.
Yeah, my parents were from the lower 48 and moved up.
And are you celebrating Thanksgiving there today?
Well, actually, it's only 11:30, so we're getting to it. But
well, have a caribou pie or whatever it is for us.
Yeah. Thanks.
Have a happy Thanksgiving, Ryan.
All right, you too.
Ryan from Anchorage, Alaska, joined us today from The Last Frontier, and we thank him for his time. And joining us now is Randall Keenan, who teaches creative writing at the University of North Carolina and wrote an essay about his home state, North Carolina, for the anthology. And he joins us from Hillsborough, North Carolina. Randall Keenan, nice to have you with us. Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving to you. Delighted to be here.
And you wrote a story, an essay, about pigs and neo-pigs and barbecue.
Yes. At first I thought I might do something on banking or biotech. That's what the future of the state looks to be. But hogs and pork seem to capture the past, the present, and the future.
You tell an absolutely hilarious story about growing up across the street from, was it your uncle's farm?
My cousin, yes.
And his kids and all of you learning about, the facts of life from hogs.
Well, that is one of those facts of being a farm boy is that you learn early and often right before your eyes.
And then you go on to tell us the neo-pork story about how one man who grew up not very far away from where you grew up has changed the face of the state.
Yes, it was in the same county, Duplin County, in southeastern North Carolina, a man who would go on to make $1 billion on pork, a man named Wendell Murphy. He sort of turned pork production into something like a factory operation.
And then you go on and talk about how, you suggest, speaking of corruption, that he may have influenced the state legislature to overlook certain problems that his industry has created.
Well, it's an ongoing story, and his aren't the only hands. I mean, the state legislature it can be implicated certainly now for not enforcing the laws, but hog waste in particular, it has become a huge problem in the state, and it's affecting our ecosystem in a really awful way.
And finally, you write, and I'm quoting here, "I am as partisan as they come and do not apologize to any man, woman, or child. The best barbecue in the world comes from North Carolina, and not just anywhere in North Carolina, from the eastern part of the state."
Well, I think that is a signal part of being a North Carolinian, is that you have to take part in the barbecue wars. And the East, the Piedmont, and the mountains, we all have our particular type of barbecue. And coming from the Southeast, I have to, you know, claim my loyalty, and my taste buds are in line with that.
You write that those who come from the other parts of the states are heathens on such matters and should be attended to as one would attend a young child. They know not what they do.
God bless them. God bless them. They'll learn one day. One day they'll learn.
Pork and hogs are the more pigs than people in North Carolina. I didn't know that.
Well, in fact, I recently found a statistic that in my home county, which is quite small, there are over 2 million hogs, and that's 40 hogs per person.
40 hogs per person.
Exactly.
That's a lot of barbecue.
That is a lot of pork. Yes, sir.
Randall Keenan, have a happy... Are you having a barbecue for this Thanksgiving?
A barbecue, turkey, and a few other pork products.
Thanks very much. Have a great holiday. Appreciate
Thank you
your
too.
Time. Bye-bye. Randall Keenan, a professor of creative writing at UNC Chapel Hill. His essay on North Carolina, again, in State by State, a panoramic portrait of America. He joined us today by phone from Hillsborough, North Carolina, his home. And we should add, there are, of course, 50 states to choose from. Those we picked reveal some bias. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And now let's see if we can get another caller on the line. And this is, let's go to Vincent. Vincent with us from Salem in Oregon.
Hi. I'm actually not an Oregon native originally. I'm originally from Maui and Hawaii. And unfortunately, Hawaii just gets kind of pushed off to the side on the holidays because it's the 50th state. We're out in the middle of the ocean.
And nobody has a barbecued nay-nay for Thanksgiving.
Oh, thank God. No, there's only about 1,500 of those birds left. So, I mean, you got to watch out for them. But we do have turkey, and we do have yams, and we do have all the other things that you would expect. But we also have things that you wouldn't expect, like barbecued opihi. So these little cone-shaped mollusks that you put a little garlic and some butter on, and you eat those as kind of an appetizer, or lomi lomi salmon right next to the cranberry sauce and the turkey. And so, I mean, it's very different. I mean, I remember going up to my uncle's house, and he lives in a place on Maui called Olinda, and you're surrounded by eucalyptus trees and pine, and you just got this real woodsy forest smell, but every once in a while you get this waft of salt ocean smell, too. So,
We hope the nene will grow and thrive and develop into great flocks, but it will, no matter what happens, live forever in crossword puzzle clues as Hawaiian goose.
Exactly, and what's really funny, though, is it's not a native itself, actually. It was a Canada goose that got lost, and so that's kind of how it got there.
Well, I guess every bird that got out to the islands one way or another is something that came from somewhere else and got lost along the way.
You're absolutely right, and actually something that I've always loved about Hawaii is that we are truly America. I mean, you have people from everywhere in the world that have been living there since, you know, time immemorial, and you know, you can't go anywhere without meeting somebody who's from Russia or from Asia or from the East Coast or West Coast. I mean, you know, Hawaii is literally a cross-section of the countries, you know, on a collection of rocks in the middle of the ocean. So
I don't mean to be stereotyping, Vincent, but at this time of the year, you're in Oregon, where I suspect it's cloudy and raining.
Oh, absolutely. I'm looking out, and we've got a sheet of slate gray, so no rain yet. Thankfully.
Well, it's early there yet, but we hope you have a great Thanksgiving dinner today.
I will, and hopefully you get one yourself.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Bye-bye now.
This email from Jeff, who's writing us, as it happens, from Portland, Oregon. Cold, he writes. I miss the cold. I'm from Wisconsin and now live in Portland, Oregon. I gush about minus 20 degrees or colder, how I used to love being out in the weather extremes. People think I'm nuts, but give me cold, sunny, and dry, over 40 degrees and damp any day. Well, thank you very much for all your contributions describing your pride in your state, its beauty, and its warts. And again, the book, State by State, A Panoramic Portrait of America. Coming up, tell us about those who are not at your Thanksgiving dinner table this year for whatever reason. Our telephone number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-8255, or send us an email, if you will, talk@npr.org. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.